ask my friend Chris to share his experience with us tonight.
What's going on? I'm Chris. I'm an alcoholic. Sober today only by the grace and mercy of God. God's grace is getting what I don't deserve, and mercy is not getting what I do deserve. What I'm going to share is what the book says. The book says what we were like will happen, what we are like now. And I'll share my experience on the resentment part of the fourth step, where I did it and how I did it. I'll just give you a quick little background on how I ended up as an alcoholic and a drug addict. I was about, I want to say 15 and a half, on my way to 16 to get my license. I was hanging out with some friends of mine. I wanted to play the big shot, so they had an idea. Let's go get something to drink. I looked the oldest out of all the guys I hung out with. I was like the leader of the pack, so I said, well, I'll go to the package store. I'll go in there. I know where I can get some booze. I went in and I got a gallon of Gallo wine. Next thought in my head was, I got to show off to these guys, so I'm going to, here's the deal. If I drink this whole gallon straight, you guys got to buy me whatever I want at McDonald's. That's where we used to hang out with the fast cars. So that was my great idea, and I also said that I have to, you know, boast about it and say I can drink that gallon down in a minute or less, and if I do, then we're going to go to McDonald's. You're going to buy me a quarter pound of cheese, fries, and a Coke. So I drink the thing down. We go to this place a quarter mile where we used to drag race, and I drank that thing down. And I didn't really realize anything was going on at first. I'm like, I did it, let's go to McDonald's. So we went to McDonald's, they bought me what I wanted, and it started kicking in. So now I'm like, you guys gotta bring me home. So I go to my house, my sister's having a party downstairs, and she was drinking and drugging long before I was, and I didn't really know, but they were down there doing their thing, and she saw that I was hammered. She's like, you know what they do for people like you? Give them coffee. So she brought me down a cup of coffee. I drank that down. She goes, I'm like, oh, I'm wicked thirsty. She goes, oh, you should drink some orange juice. So she gets me orange juice. I drink it down, right? Not a good combination. You know, Gallo wine, orange juice, and coffee. Next thing I know, I'm blowing chunks all over the floor. And she's got like a hot friend there. I'm half in the bag. And I have a car. I don't have my license, but I had a car in the driveway. My parents, they put it in the back of the driveway, and they put two cars in front of it. And they hung the keys up on this keychain that I made in wood shop. So I'm like, they must have put it back there for a reason. It's blocked off by their car. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to steal the keys. I'm going to take the car. I'm going to ask that hot chick if she wants to go for a ride in my car. And I'll just drive through the backyard and through other people's yards. So I do. I start up. I drive backwards. I spin around in my yard, and I start driving through other people's yards. And I go driving with her for a little while. Then I come home, and the rest of the night's like a blur. So that was my first thing with drinking or drugging. I never did anything. Never smoked a cigarette or joint. That was my first attempt. So right then from the start, I knew my drug of choice was more, not heroin or Valiums or alcohol or wine or beer. It was always more. So I started with excess, and I want to say like, sometime like doing that, partying, whatever, you know, that was my thing on the weekends. That was our thing to do. We just drink. And in the beginning, it was all fun and no trouble. But then in the end, it was all trouble and no fun. So what ended up happening was, you know, I'm doing this for a couple of years. I'm like 19. I got the motorcycle. I got the GTX. I got a lot of stuff going on. I got hurt at work. So I was collecting workers' comp, and then I ended up getting a settlement. But I bought a bike, and I'm cruising. I go down to drink with my friends, and then next thing, you know, the bar's getting ready to close. So I drank a couple of pitches and a couple of shots, and I'm like, all right, so I'll meet you down the street at your house. We're going to move the party to the house. My friend had his own house. He was like 19, you know, he had his own house, had a pool. Chicks were coming over, so everything was good. Sex, drugs, rock and roll. So we're going to move the party down there. And I don't know what possessed me. I remember like putting a key in the bike, and then I remember vaguely like getting down the center of town in Somerset, and a cop was behind me, and he said, you know, slow down, something like that. And I don't know why, but I just pegged him a finger and took off. Now I'm on a high-speed chase through a couple of towns. So I'm just like flying. I remember looking down at like a blur, looking at my tack. It was like 12,500 as I was coming around the corner. So I was like flying all over the place through the back roads. I was trying to get to this place they call the pits. I was gonna go ditch the cops in the pits, but I was going so fast I blew by it. And then I took a right on this long street, William Street, and they had a roadblock set up. So when I went down, I was just doing like 105 when I was flying down Williams. And I came down at the bottom of the hill, it was a patch of sand. I hit the patch of sand, I was flying. My bike went into the grass. I went 240 feet, landed on my full face helmet, broke that open and slid on my face another 40 feet, shattered my face, shattered my skull. Went to one hospital. I was in so mangled, they didn't even know what to do with me. They sent me to the trauma center. So I went to Rhode Island Hospital Trauma Center, and then I went into a coma. And then I remember, like, I was laying in bed, and then I remember, like, I was at perfect peace, like I never felt in my life before. And I remember I opened my eyes, and I saw ceiling tiles, and I was pissed off. I was like, wow, I felt like such peace. And now, I don't know, and so I asked my, you know, I'm looking around like, where am I? She goes, oh, you're in a bad motorcycle. I'm like, no, I wasn't in no bad. I said, where am I? This doesn't look familiar. She's like, you remember Rhode Island Hospital, you're in the trauma center. So they rewired my jaw, reconstructed my face, and that kind of like scared me. And at that time, they were putting me on narcotics, you know, for the pain, obviously. Reconstructing my face, I had some road rash, nothing too nuts. I mean, I was bad enough. The doctor said, you know, take an egg, throw it on the ground, and put it back together. That's what I do with your face. So when I got out of that, I was kind of a little afraid to drink because of what happened to me. So at that time, I was going out with this crazy broad, and she's like, hey, this guy at work's got perks, you know? And I'm like, yeah? They're like $5 a piece. I'm like, really? So I had money, and I was selling weed. I was a marijuana salesman. I was selling like bales of weed and pounds of weed, so I had plenty of money. So I'm like, all right, go get them. I didn't really want to drink, you know, but so I started eating the perks, and you know, I found utopia. I got a six-pack of Heineken. I was sitting on my porch. I had my GTX and my bike and a bottle of perks, and I just like eat handfuls of them and drink beers, and I thought I arrived. I thought, this is what life's about. I finally found out what life was about. Right here. I got it. And it just went downhill from there. You know, I was getting perks all the time, and I was drinking with the perks because I didn't really want to just drink. I could drink a couple beers, eat a handful of perks, I get the same buzz as drinking a bunch of beers. And I wouldn't have the danger of driving and getting, you know, in trouble or getting in a jackpot. So I figured this is how I'm going to compensate for that. And then one day I was like, hey, can you give me some perks? The guy's like, no, but I can get you some heroin. Oh, no, I'm not doing that. He goes, yeah, we go down to Bedford and get a bag, you know, it's $20, we could split it, you know, and I'm not shooting nothing, and you know, he's like, you can snort it. Oh, really? All right. So I snort the bag. Back then, you're talking like the, 87, 88, 89, when real heroin was out there, and you know, we split that bag, and that was it. I was off and running, and things got ugly real quick. And then, you know, I started to do like some robberies. I did like an unarmed robbery. I didn't get caught for that. It was actually a masked armed robbery, but I didn't get caught for that. And then it just started getting worse. I was doing like B&Es and stuff. And then I did some councilmen's. I broke into some councilman's house, and I was coming out of there, and I ended up getting pinched. I was all beaned out and heroined out, walking down the street, and I got grabbed. So I ended up getting a couple years in jail. And, you know, so I did most of my time, then I got put to a minimum. This is where the big book comes in. So now I'm in there, and there's a guy down there, he used to go to the Hyannis meeting, and he worked there. And I was telling him, yeah, I tried out some halfway house, and, you know, it didn't work for me, and I went to AA, it didn't work for me. He's like, did you do the steps? And I said, no, I never did the steps. So he was like, well, the steps are in the big book, and I go to this meeting, it's down in Hyannis, it's a men's meeting, and, when you get out, I'm going to give you my number. You want to get out, I can hook you up with a sponsor, help you bring you through the steps. I said, all right. So I got out a couple months later, and this was in 94 when I got introduced to it. I got out in January 95. he introduced me to the guy, and we start going through the book. The first few readings, you know, he's talking about the, you know, the phenomenon of craving, the allergy, the mental obsession. Someday I can control it, use it, not get in trouble. And then God could, I can't. And then he would if I let him. And so we were around the third step, and he said, you know, Chris, God loves you. I said this when I was here last time. God loves you just the way you are, and he loves you so much, he doesn't want you to stay that way. And that kind of clicked. It made sense to me. You know, that even in my foolishness, at that time I realized there was a loose nut between the steering wheel and the seat, and that was me. And I was willing to do something about it. So I said, all right, I'm willing to do anything. He's like, you know, if you're willing to go to any lengths, and, you know, I'll guide you, I'm your temporary sponsor until I bring you to your ultimate sponsor, who's God. What I'll do for you is I'll just show you how to do the steps, and that's going to help you to overcome alcoholism, give you personality change sufficient to overcome alcoholism, and you're going to build a personal relationship with God. So I said, all right, fine. So he says, make a list of people who have pissed you off. And this is where I started writing the resentment part of the fourth step. So went down to the street. Now, my friend was doing the steps too at the same time. His sponsor bought him a notebook. Mine made me buy my own notebook. So right there, resentment. So, all right, Norm, put him on the list, right? So I start writing the names, and I'm on parole now. I'm on parole on a house bid, right? And I figure that, you know, there's better things to do than do a fourth step, so I'll throw that to the side, right? I don't know, maybe a month later, I'm shooting heroin and I'm doing crimes again, and so I get arrested, I'm on parole. Parole's like, yeah, see you later. Stay where you are. So now I'm directly indicted, right? And now I'm on my way to state prison. So I'm like, all right, so I get up to Concord and I'm in a cell, and in my mind, I'm like, what am I doing here? I don't understand what just happened here. You know, and back then, it was a lot of craziness in there. You know, at that time, they were giving us, like, real cans and, you know, real knives and forks and shit like that. So being in that environment. So now, I had just written, but I felt like a failure. And then in this book, it says, first we search out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. So I was kind of like on that fence. Yeah, I want to find out why, what makes me tick and why I'm not successful at life and what am I doing here? I don't even belong here, but I do belong here because I'm a menace. So I get classed to Norfolk. I write, I send a letter out to them. I get shipped to Norfolk. Now I'm in Norfolk, and one day a letter just came from under my door, cell door. And my cellie, I never got any mail. Nobody wanted anything to do with me. My parents, nobody wanted anything to do with me. So he said, this letter's for you. Really? So I look at it, and it's from my sponsor. He says, go back to writing. So my experience is a little different. I wrote my fourth step, this part, through the mail. So what would happen is he would write me instructions on a piece of paper, and then he would send it to me. It was a long process. I did it fast because I was always writing because I wanted to get well. And so I would write, and then I would send samples off to him. He would correct them and then send them back to me. And I would I'd look at them, and I'd make corrections in my notebook. I didn't have a notebook like most people have a notebook. What I had was pieces of paper on a legal pad, and I'd rip them off, and I'd write little microscopic, you know, shit on there so that nobody could read it. Like if the IPS grabbed me or one of the COs grabbed it, they wouldn't be able to, they'd see it so small, they'd have to get a magnifying glass to figure out what it said. So, you know, so I make my list. I do my list of peoples, institutions, principles. Principles like an ideal, codes of moral conduct, institutions like the RMVs on there, on everybody's probably, banks, stores that I robbed, you know, why would they, you know, try to press charges on me? And so now I get to the cause and effects, and I get to, like, these directions. I'm looking at them, and he's like, all right, these are the, you know, write down the reason why. Well, why do you have the resentment? Who's the resentment? What is the resentment? Keep it short, and then what does it affect? So I did that. I didn't really have too much of a problem with that. I sent some samples. He corrected them, sent them back. I was like, all right, that's good. While I'm doing this, so I'm in a regular unit. So now I'm starting to cause and effects. I'm in a regular unit. Now they send me to the mods. So the mods are like a room like this, but it's all bunk beds. And guys are just yelling and screaming 24/7 in there.
And I'm trying to write. I'm up on the punk bunk, and I'm trying to write, you know, and I'm like, oh, my God. And now, being in prison is a resentment factory. That's why they have swords in there. That's why you make pieces of steel and sharpen them, because every day you want to kill somebody. So a lot of prayer, a lot of trepidation. I would go, like, to the library so I could write. I try to find somewhere quiet. And then, so I'm doing my cause and effects. Now I start to get to the turnarounds. Where am I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking and frightened? At that time, I got moved to another block. And so I start doing the turnarounds, and I'm looking at, you know, what did I want? What lie did I tell myself? What action did I take? And what was I afraid of? And those were the turnarounds. So I had to answer each question, you know. Joe thinks he's a tough guy. You know, that was a lot of my resentments, a lot of fancied resentments. You know, it says fancied or real. You know, if a girl didn't go out with me, oh, she thinks she shits ice cream, and if that guy over there thinks he's a tough guy, you know, if I went, you know, if I fought him, I'd kick his ass, and, you know, this was the shit going on in my head. And so I'm writing this stuff out. As I'm writing this stuff out, I feel like I'm getting closer to God. I feel like something's happening to me, and so I go to this unit 7-2, and I'm writing. I'm good. I'm in it with a good celly. I'm in a quiet unit. I'm thankful. I'm writing. They say, and I'm cooking, we're cooking in there, and it's like, I'm like, oh yeah, this is awesome. So I'm doing my time, and I'm writing, and I feel good. And they're like, hey, you're going to the drug block, because when I first got there, I signed up for so I go downstairs, I tell them, I'm not going to no drug, fuck that, I'm not going to drug block, I'm staying right here. They go, so he goes, all right, I'm going to call a sergeant, right? He says, hey, I called the shift commander. He says, hey, you can go to the hole or you can go to the drug block. I go, yeah, all right, I'm packing my shit right now. I go upstairs, throw it all in a bag, and I walk across the quad to 1-2. I go over to the drug block. So I'm in there, I'm doing my writing. So I hung around with this lifer. He was back on a drinking. He was drinking. He just did 15 years. He was out for 11. He never did any step work or anything, and he was back on a parole violation on a life sentence. That sucks. So I'm hanging out with him. One day we're sitting in the cell, and I'm doing my writing, and we were hanging out, and he said, hey, come by my room. He's like this, you know, smoke and drink coffee. So I'm like, yeah, all right. So I go down there, we're hanging out. He just got out of the shower, he had his boxes on, his shirt, he's combing his hair. So this guy comes to the door, and he knocks on the door, and he goes, hey. He goes, I go, what do you want? So I go to the door, I go, what do you want? You can't talk to him, you got to talk to me first. I was like playing with the guy, but he took me serious. He got scared, and I said, give me the book, and then I closed the door. So the next day I go to AA meeting, right? So the IPS call my boss and say, hey, we want Rigby up at the OIC. I'm like, what? I go, why do they want me? He's like, I don't know, they want you though. And I go, all right. So I go up there. So I'm like, well, what's up? So they put me in the room and they go, so they're asking me if the lifer was giving me canteen or favors for sex. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? So the lifer comes in when I was both handcuffed sitting in the room. And this is things starting looking ugly, but I'm going to show you how God worked it out in a couple of seconds. We're looking at each other like puzzled, like what just happened? Now we're losing it. I got a minimum move. He just got a move to a pre-release so he could get out. Now it's all on hold. We're pending investigation in the hole. So we get cuffed. We go down to the hole. And I go in my cell, and I'm like freaking out, spazzing out. I'm like, I work so hard, I'm doing the steps, and now this happened. And basically when I was doing the steps in prison, it was like I had God, and I had a paper directions, and I had this. That was it. So I really had to depend on God a lot. So when I was in the cell, there was nothing in there. And not even shit paper in there. So I'm praying. I say, God, I'm like, I'm out of my wit's end here. And so I just wanted to lift up the mattress to move it. And when I lifted it up, there was a Bible under there. So I grabbed the Bible and I opened up the Bible randomly. And I looked down and it said, fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I'm going to uphold you with my righteous right hand. It was like I audibly heard that. And I closed the book, I put it under the bunk, I lay down on my bunk, no sheets, no pillow, nothing. I went to sleep like this. And a week later, I was in a better cell with a better cellmate, and I got my minimum move, and a couple weeks later, I was off. So by doing that, that increased my faith in God. So I'll tell you a little where I am today. So that was how I did the process, how I did the steps, a little tiny bit on the mechanics. You know, when you're doing it, it's not you understand the steps, then you do the steps. You do the steps, then you understand the steps. And it's been opened up for me for the past 20-something years, you know. And I've had ups and downs, successes and failures. And so today, you know, I had a resentment a couple of days ago, how I deal with something like that. So this guy calls me up on a job. I run my own paint contracting company. I do this small job. I do a favor for a reference friend of mine. We do it. And then everything's good. All right, I'm going to send a check. And then, like, okay, no problem. And then he sends me a text and, oh, this and that. It's only like a small, small job. I just went in there, did some touch-ups so we could sell the house, you know. And then, oh, I got to talk to my brother and this and that. And I'm like, you know, and I'm getting ready to leave for Myrtle Beach like Saturday morning, right? So I don't want to deal with this foolishness. So I'm like, you fuck. You know, like, not to him. I didn't say it on the phone, but in my head, and I'm saying it out loud to myself. And I'm like, so I said, all right. I said, God, move this from me. But it came back again. So what I ended up doing after dealing with that a couple of times in my head, I just sat down and I wrote it out just like I did that fourth step. I just wrote it out, and then I asked God to remove it, and I haven't thought of it since. So the stuff works. So basically what I'm saying on this is by doing that work and having those experiences and practicing it, it works. It actually worked because before I didn't have any kind of solution for, I'll tell you how I used to be and why I would eat the perks and drink the beers. I would get so resentful and angry, I felt like a pressure cooker ready to explode. But if I drank and popped some perks or V's, I would calm down. I thought that was the solution. But it wasn't. Because what ended up happening was, I was in my car, and I saw this girl on the back of the Harley, and I go, hey, I was with my friend. I go, hey, look at that chick over there. Look at the ass on her. Hey, wait a minute. That ass looks familiar. So I pull up on the side. It's my girlfriend on her ex-boyfriend's Harley. So how do I handle that back then? So today is a little different. So back then, what I do is I pull over. So I got my charger, and he's got his bike, and he's trying to race me, right? We're racing down the highway. He takes a left. So now I'm trying to run him off the road, right? Then I come to my senses a little bit, so I say, yeah, I don't want to, like, run somebody over and end up in Walpole. That's an automatic. I'll have to, you know, get a sword the second I go in there, so I'm not into that. So what I'll do is I'll go home, and I'll hide my car in the back. So I figure the situation's over, but no, not for me. So he pulls up in front of my house, and I'm up in my bedroom. So on my wall over there is two shotguns loaded with deer slugs, right? So he's yelling up to my window, and he's like, hey, Rigby, you're dead. I'm dead. I says, no, I don't think so. So I grab the shotgun, I run down on my front porch, right? My mother's trying to, like, hold me and pull me back in the house, right? And I'm like, let me go. And I go out on the porch and I put I had an Ithaca Model 51. It had a little red, like, dot on the end. And I had that right on her helmet. This gun had two triggers. So I had two deer slugs in there. I put it on her head and I pulled the trigger. And I used to shoot every day. I used to hit everything. But I missed her. So I know that was the grace of God. Like an angel lifted up that gun up because I never missed. And it went over her head. And, you know, I ended up getting charged, and it ended up getting dismissed. But that's how I used to handle my anger. And today what I do is I'll talk to somebody, I'll call somebody in the program, I'll talk the resentment out, and I have a solution today. I don't have to go off on anybody. Somebody cut me off and be like, hey, you asshole, you know what I mean? That's about it. That's getting a little pissed off. But when it comes back, that's what a resentment is. If I think about it all day or the next day or next month, because in the past, that would fester, and then I would think about how I'm going to get you, and I'm going to take down your plate, and I'm going to put shotguns in where my lights are with triggers going into under my dash, and I'm going to hunt you down. That's how I would plot your death in my head before I did the steps. Now it would be like, screw it, let it go, you know what I mean? The guy gives me, all right, okay, you know what? This job I just did for you is a gift. That's my gift to you. And it works, and that's what I do. I have a solution today. Before, I didn't have a solution. I was just out of control. So I'm grateful to be here, and I'm glad to be here that I could share some experience. Thank you. Thank you.